Well, ladies and gentlemen, we probably were somewhat familiar along the way, if you've done some Bible study, that there's three general words in the Greek language that mean love. One of them is eros, another one is phileo, and another one is agapo or agape, or versions of those. So I'm going to start out with asking the question, is eros, which is that found in the New Testament? Of course, eros is romantic type of love. And then phileo and agape, are they the same? Well, without digging too hard, it's hard to do this without digging too deep into the Greek, but these words are found in the verb form, the noun form, and the adjective form. And so if you take a look at the word eros, which we refer to as romantic love, it's not found in the New Testament. It's not there. So we really have that the word, or is neither is the verb form of it, ereo, to love passionately. So although there are Greek words, they just don't appear in the New Testament. And so the words for love that appear in the New Testament, the verb phileo and the noun phileos, and the verb agapeo and the noun agape, or both of those versions, and they also appear in both noun and adjective forms as well. And agape and it and its related words are strong words for God's love. Phileo is also used to express God's love as well. If we take a look at a startling statement in the Greek-English lexicon of the New Testament, based on semantic domains, by Lowe and Nita. On page 294, they say this: it would be quite wrong to assume that phileo and philia refer only to human love, while agapeo and agape refer to divine love. Both sets of terms are used for the total range of loving relations between people and God, between God and Jesus Christ. In other words, we can't make a blanket statement that saying agape always refers to divine love and philia or philios always refer to human brotherly love. The following passages might be of some help in understanding how the terms are used. So if we take a look at the word philio, that's P-H-I-L-E-O, or philos, P-H-I-L-O-S, these words both occur as verbs and nouns in the New Testament. Phileo is a verb that occurs over 25 references in the New Testament. And phileo is a verb. If we take a look at the Greek-English lexicon of the New Testament by Bauer, Arndt, and Gingrich, it defines phileo as to love or have affection for, to like, or even to kiss. If we look at some of the occurrences, we see phileo has a wide range of uses, including godly love. And the first occurrence of phileo is in Matthew 6, verse 8. And the interesting, the reference there is when Christ said, hypocrites love to pray standing in the synagogue. In other words, they want to be heard, for they're loud. And that's the word that's used for phileos, where he's describing how the hypocrites like to do things boldly and in public. The second occurrence after Matthew 6, 5, the second occurrence is Matthew 10, 37. And this is one in which case Christ warns us not to love, meaning phileo, the father or mother more than him. So God, in fact, if you were to look at it in context, that actually means love less by comparison. But the term word here is phileo. So, and then we can trot on down to John 5:20. God the Father loves the Son. Well, there here again, they use the term phileo. So we have multiple uses of this term phileo. So it's not always agape, doesn't always refer to godly love. And I'm going to have to be careful because I'll look through the verses as you, because I can flip through them pretty quick here and it'll keep your fingers too busy. In John 16:27, for the Father himself loves you because you've loved me and have believed that I came forth from God. So this is a demonstration, phileo, that God the Father uses the term phileo, loves the disciples, because the disciples love Jesus Christ. Then we go to Revelation 3:19. In Revelation 3:19, it's simply put, Jesus loves his church. I can find it here. In 3:19, as many as I love, I rebuke and chasten, therefore be zealous and repent. So the term Jesus used here is phileo, meaning he's loving his church. And therefore looks to organize their thinking, if I could say, when it says rebuke and chasten. If we move to Revelation 22, verse 15. And it lists a number of sins in Revelation 22:15. But outside are dogs and sorcerers, sexually immoral, murderers and idolaters, and whoever loves and practices a lie. So we are not to phileo or love lies. This phileo is often linked with another New Testament, with other New Testament words, and it'll form compound words when you put two words together. Philotheos, meaning lovers of God, or philosophia, lovers of wisdom. So you can combine this word, phileo, into others. Philargyria, lovers of money. Philandros, lover of husband, or love of husband. Philadelphia, brotherly love. Philanthropia, love toward man. So this whole filial type love can be used in a variety of ways. And if we turn to Luke 22:47, we're going to see an unusual or a surprising view in Luke 22:47. And this is when Christ, the night before he was crucified, and while he was still speaking, behold a multitude, and he who was called Judas, one of the 12, went before him and drew near to Jesus and kissed him. Well, the term here is a form of, it's philema, which is a form of the word love. So it's surprising. In other words, it was a loving embrace that which Judas used to betray Jesus Christ. So phileo does have a wide usage in the New Testament, and it does include godly love. This philos is the noun form, noun meaning a person, place, or thing, and is translated as friend. Christ was criticized for being a philos, or a friend, of publicans and sinners in Matthew 11:19. I think I'll turn there to Matthew 11:19. In fact, if you look at the things that Christ was accused of, what was he accused of? He was accused of breaking the Sabbath, and he was accused of who he associated with. Probably never happened to us, right? In Matthew 11:19, the Son of Man came eating and drinking, and they say, look what a glutton and a winebibber, a friend of tax collectors and sinners. So there was an accusation that that in fact they were that they were giving talking about Christ. If we take a look in James 2:23, see, we read this in English, but and I don't think that we're conversant with Greek. If we had Greek conversing every day, we would probably have a little different understanding of some of these verses. But they were brought into English to give the best flavor in the context of the word. In James 2:23, and I'll read it as soon as I get there. And James 2:23, and the scripture is fulfilled, which says, Abraham believed God, and it was accounted to him for righteousness, and he was called the friend of God. Well, the word for friend here is philos. So it has that, in other words, loving God, a friend of God. And yet we're warned also then to be careful about being a friend of the world. And that's probably something we'll get into on a different, on another Bible study. So this, bear in mind, this philos has a wide variety of uses, and it's not just man to man or God to man or man to God. And then there's this word agape, which we hear, or agapeo, different versions of the word. And this particular word, the noun, is defined in the Greek English lexicon of the New Testament by Bauer, Arndt, and Gingrich, as human, both human love and the love of God in Christ. The verb form is defined as an affection for persons and of the love of supernatural beings and God's love to men. The agape love, regardless of whether it receives from the one loved, it's God's nature. He loves before he is loved. Agape has a deliberate desire for the good of the one loved, which shows itself in sacrificial action for the person's good. So the agape, term agape, is used to describe the deepest form of love. Well, the verbs and the nouns are found more frequently in the New Testament. The found most frequently in the New Testament are phileo and philos. And but we are to agapeo, or love both our neighbor and our enemies. We can turn to Matthew 5, verse 43. So this is a deeper love. Matthew 5:43, you have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you. The here we go. That was Matthew 5:43 and 44. So we don't always just love, meaning agapo, those who love us first. We're to have that outgoing nature. If we read down to the verse 46 in that same Matthew 5, for if you love those who love you, what reward have you? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? So there's a higher expectation for brethren who are believers in God, that they would, regardless of whether the other person loves them first or loves them back, that to express a type of godly love toward the others. The if we take a look at Matthew 22:37 through 29. There we go. This is after the or about the time when Christ was speaking and talking to the lawyers, the scribes and the Pharisees. Verse 37, and Jesus said to him, because this is after he had been asked, what is the greatest commandment in the law? And Jesus said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. And verse 39, and the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Well, this is agapeo. With regard to what we call the two greatest commandments, meaning to love God and love your neighbor as yourself. So that's with a deeper type of love. Jesus, we often have memorized the verse John 3:16, where God so loved the world he gave his only begotten Son. Well, that again is agapeo. Jesus loved me and gave himself for me in Galatians 2:20. Again, agapeo. Father used to love his son, it's expressed in John 3:35. The Father, agapeo, the Son. And just before Christ was crucified in John 13:34, he said, we are to agapeo one another, to love one another. We usually read this in Passover, in the spring, in that ceremony, in that memorial service, because that's how you know as I mentioned in the beginning, that's how Christ said you know whether or not a person is a fellow Christian, is in John 13:35. By this man, all men know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another, and that's agapeo. So the terms are used consistently through the Bible, but interestingly enough, it never addresses the term eros. We just keep passing by. So people often can think of eros as a form of love. And I remember I was asked at the preteen camp, and this was what, 2 years ago, a year or two ago, and I was giving and I was asked to speak on love to children under the age of 10. What do children under the age of 10 know about love? Because it's an emotion. It's, you know, they don't have the higher order thinking necessarily until they get to be, you know, 12 or 13. They don't understand the abstract. And so I had the little boys were dressed in blue and the little girls were dressed in pink, and they were sitting there, and I'm supposed to explain to them what love is. And what could they relate love to? And so I turned to the group and I said, can anybody tell me how your mommy and daddy met? All the girls' hands went up. There weren't any boys' hands that went up. So the whole concept was there. Yeah, we can kind of tell. But what they were thinking of was, of course, what they saw in front of them. You know, the idea of romantic love. And the little boys were more like, huh? What? You know, just largely clueless that when you're 6 to 10 years old, it really wasn't something that they deeply thought about. Back in Mr. Rowland's time when he was a little boy, giving grief to the children or the others on the street. If we take a look at how men are to love their wives, let's look at Ephesians 5:25. Ephesians 5:25. Now you'd think, well, that's got to be romantic love, right? In Ephesians 5:25, Romans, there we go. Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, here we go. In Ephesians 5:25, it says very succinctly, husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her. Well, the term here is the same term, agape or agapeo. So it didn't say, you know, just only romantically. It has to be a deeper value to the love than just the romantic love. although I don't know of any wife on earth that would not want the romantic form of love to occur in their relationship. Men, agapeo, darkness rather than light. Ooh, that's in other words, there are people that love the darkness rather than the light of truth. The rulers in Judea love, meaning agapeo, the praise of men more than the praise of God. So sometimes people love the wrong things, things that aren't good for them and not good for others. We read in 2 Peter 2:15, and I'm not going to go through it, but that's the story of Balaam. And what did he love, meaning agape? He loved the wages of unrighteousness. And then we're told not to love the world in 1 John 2:15. So we have to parse these sentences or these verses to understand the full meaning, but to bear in mind that there are things that we shouldn't love and then things that we should love. The word, when we read and we think of the love chapter in the Bible, 1 Corinthians 13, it's used, the word agape is used exclusively. Sometimes it's translated love, sometimes charity. But the word, the Greek root word there is agape. If we look at Galatians 5:22 and we read the list of the fruits of the Holy Spirit, and it talks about love there, again, the term agape. So if we want to, just to conclude, there are the three words that are used for love, Greek words in the New Testament era. The word eros is not found in the New Testament. And in a few instances, both agape and phileo can be synonymous, as God used both of those terms to describe his kind of love. But agape not only occurs much more than phileo, it's the word that's used much more often, but not exclusively, to refer to God's love. I do have just a few verses I just want to go through, and more of a listing. I'll probably just read them. I don't know if you want to look them up or just note them. But I did already note John 13:35. By this will all men know that you are my disciples if you have love one for another. But we're told other uses of agapeo is about loving your neighbor in Romans 13:8. Owe no one anything except to love one another, for he who loves one another has fulfilled the law, or meaning is performing the requirements of the law of love. In Galatians 5:13, for you, brethren, have been called to liberty. Do not use liberty as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love, meaning agape, serve one another. So love means, is used, because we have love, then we serve other people to show our love to them. In 1 Thessalonians 4:9, and this talks about brotherly love, but concerning brotherly love, meaning agapeo, you have no need that I should write to you, for you yourselves are taught by God to love one another. Here Paul is telling the congregation, I don't have to do this. You already know this. You already know that you have love for one another. In 1 Peter 3:8, finally, all of you be of one mind, having compassion for one another. Love as brothers. And here it's Philadelphos, meaning love as brothers. And it goes on to reinforce it by saying, be tenderhearted and courteous. Well, if we're going to love someone and we're not tenderhearted, probably not very loving. If we're not courteous, probably not very loving. 1 Peter 4:8. Another two uses of the word agape. And above all things, have fervent love for one another, for love will cover a multitude of sins. Wow. You know, and that's sort of like, you know, when you're playing Monopoly and you have a get out of jail free card. Whoa, this is a pretty good, because if you're showing love, what is that demonstrating to God? That you have a converted heart, you have a converted mind, you have converted actions, and that means you're leaving sin behind. It's not that you have a get-out-of-jail-free card, and as they've done in old, oh, here, you can commit so many sins with this card. No, that that's not going to work out too well, as we heard in the sermon today. So the love covering a multitude of sins, meaning you can turn around and reverse that course. Instead of sin, provide love one to another. In 1 John 3:11, for this is the message you've heard from the beginning, that we should love one another. And again, agape, another version of that word. In other words, this is consistent. From the beginning means when God made people. That's the word from the beginning. From the beginning, from each beginning, from creation, from Christ's ministry, that this is the message, and because God is love. We take a look at 1 John, it's my last verse, 1 John 4 and verse 7. In 1 John 4, 7, beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, and everyone who loves agape is born of God and knows God. So those are the people that are on their way to salvation, who had salvation, who are getting salvation, and who endure to the end will receive salvation, are those who are loving one another through the use of agape or agapeo. And that's all of the remarks I have on the verbs that are used and the nouns for love in the New Testament. So I'd like to, if Mr. Jackson, if you would hand out the handouts. And I've got six questions, because it's nice to hear all this stuff, you know, and wade through some of the Greek. But what do you do with it when you get home? We need to have an application. And so question number one is, what is the difference between a home with love and a home without love? Question two, what is the difference between a business with love and a business without love? Question three, do we show love when we overlook the sins of others? And question four, can a non-Christian show love? Question five, is it possible to love a person but not really like him or her? And number six, is it possible to give all you possess to the poor and even give over your body to be burned and still not love? So let's take a few minutes. Let's form in groups of three or four and see if you can put some answers in, and then we'll come back to you in a few minutes and see if you can answer and combine our answers here in a few minutes. Well, hopefully you've pretty well resolved how we can definitively answer each and every question. So when we go away from here, we will have got it pretty well ironed out, nailed down tight, and we can go away with confidence that every circumstance will be dealt with by our answers, right? Or as close as we can today. So let's take a look at Bible study on the words of love. Let's take a look at the application of love, because that's what we have to take away. That's what we go home with. So let's ask our first question. What is a difference between a home with love and a home without love? I know it's hard for us to imagine what a home without love would be like, but perhaps somebody might imagine that, or have seen it, or know of someone that could. So does anybody have a response on the difference between a home with love or a home without love? And I remember this was over 20 years ago at the feast in Minneapolis, a one-year time. And there was a sermon, and included in that was about a tribe in another continent for which they worked very hard to express no emotion in the home. And then it showed the side effects of no emotion in the home, particularly love. They could be harsh, but they couldn't be kind. And it was astounding. They had short lifespans. As you can imagine, the relationships were all temporary. It was remarkable. But now this is here and now. So what's the difference between a home with or without love? Let's pick a volunteer.
Well, I kind of wrote down some things that we were all saying, but A home without love, people are uncaring, selfish, maybe deceiving of each other. And
she, do you want to do it? Recognizing the difference, you know, I like what it says in Ephesians, how Christ loved the church, and if the husband in a reverent home, a husband would love his family, love his wife, and the wife would reverence her husband, and he would admonish his children in the Lord to bring them up in the Lord, and the children would obey their parents. And there wouldn't be, there would be struggle, of course. Everybody has struggle. But I think in these days, most families do experience, you know, difficulties. But a loving home is going to have Christ-centered and be prayer, worship. And an unloving home is more selfish, centered around media, social media, things that are superficial, things that are going to be all about self and the flesh and the lust of the flesh.
Things getting in the way of loving others in the household. Very well put, very well put. Any other observations?
It'd be a peaceful home if it was a loving home.
Good point. Peaceful and a happy home is a loving home. Which means without the love, we can presume it's not going to be peaceful and it's not going to be happy. Doesn't everybody have a refrigerator magnet that says, ain't mama happy, ain't nobody happy? and so there is a value. As an economist, we use a different term than happiness. We say utility. That covers the whole range of what's the most useful thing you can do, or utility. And so what's utilitarian? And it's to your best interest to have a happy home, and what's was one with love, as Donna said, because there is a striking difference. The fruits of the Spirit, fruit of the Spirit comes in when you have love in the home. Yeah, sometimes it's not what we do, it's what we choose to not do. Once again, to quote my father, don't miss an opportunity to keep your mouth shut. I don't know why he ever said that to me, I just don't get that. But it was a good thing to learn along the way. Any other comments for number one? Then we'll move to number two. What is the difference between a business with love and a business without love? Mr. Jackson.
Well, a business with love, they'll be honest. They'll be helping you rather than being dishonest and ripping people off. You go to a car dealership and you'll find out what I mean. You know, they'll skip over everything that might be wrong with that car just to get the sale. You know, and they want to make the sale no matter what consequence to you, as long as it benefits them.
That's a good point.
Otherwise, they say, we know it's got bad tires on it. You're going to have to replace, but we're not going to go through the expense, but you can still buy it.
Mm-hmm. Again, to quote my dad, he said, if it's called Honest John's Car Sales, why did they put the word honest in front? Was there a question as to his character? any other differences between a loving love in a business and a love in a business without love?
I guess I learned everything I need to know when I was 28 years old and first got married. We rented our first apartment in the little town where we were living. And I thought the lawyer was my friend that filled out the forms, and they were about 6 inches thick. And he skipped right to the last page and he said, Sandy, sign right there on the bottom line. Don't worry about that other stuff. You don't need to read it. He said, it's all there. Everything from me and nothing for you.
Right up front. It's kind of an author. It was an author that wrote some years ago a remarkable book. And he was a businessman was explaining about his experience with attorneys. And his attorney said, don't worry, I'll take care of you. And the writer says, I blush as I write this, for I was indeed taken care of. Any other observations about a business with love and without love? I think honesty is a good point. Just a moment.
Where Tim works, they were saying that your boss said put your family first, which is, you know, most people are always saying, you know, we're first, do whatever you can for us, you know, work all night if you have to. But I thought that was really kind of her, where she was concerned about your family too. So
that's rare. I've been fortunate to have somebody who says put your life and your family first. The third question is, do we show love when we overlook the sins of others? Do we show love when we overlook the sins of others? Now remember, keeping our mouths shut is important sometimes, but is it always critical for us to say nothing? Mr. Jackson?
I believe that sometimes we do by overlooking someone's sins. Maybe their heart's not as converted as ours. You know, they still need a chance, just the same way as God has given us a chance. They need to grow and to overcome the same as we do. By overlooking their sin in that sense, we're not condoning the sin, but we're overlooking the flaw that they have at the moment.
Any other observations? Mrs. Jackson.
I don't believe that we have to point out somebody's sins to them all the time. I don't know that that's overlooking the sins, but we can overlook frailties, and I don't think it's necessary to be constantly pointing out sins to somebody. But if somebody's in the church and they're just openly doing an egregious sin and we know about it, then we have a responsibility to go to them. But just as far as somebody to be constantly just writing them about something, I don't think that's necessary.
It's a good point. It brings to mind Proverbs 26, verses 4 and 5. Sometimes you say something and sometimes you don't.
I think it's important to recognize that love covers a multitude of sin, and that we're to pray for those who persecute us or those that misuse us or our enemies, and to show love and bless them, in fact. And in doing so, I think that's showing love.
That's a good point. It's always hard. Yeah, when they've got you frying on the griddle, it's really, really hard to tell them how much you appreciate their good points. Number four, can a non-Christian show love? Can a non-Christian show love?
They can show love, but he can't show agape love, I don't believe.
That's a good point. Any other observations? Can a non-Christian show love? They can show kindness, consideration, patience. But if they're a non-Christian, is it really in their heart, or is it out of a matter of convenience? And you can find good people that do good things for a while. But ultimately, what's the end thereof? If there's sin involved, of course, the end thereof are the ways of death. Any other observations on number four? You'll need the mic.
Mr. Walmsley's talked about so many nice things people have done, you know, because of Amy's situation. Lots of people not in the church have prayed and you know, given them lots of good wishes. So that was something very noteworthy, I guess.
And that would follow up Mr. Hawk's point about... they can show phileo type of love because she did have a very good environment, as I understand, at the hospital, being well taken care of. People were looking after her needs and indeed continue to. So that's really we can't cast that aside and say that that's not possible. Certainly it is, that they can show a form of love and kindness and consideration. Well, now let's go to the tough one. Number five, is it possible to love a person but not like him or her?
I'll leave the room.
Is it possible to love a person but not like him or her? I can...
Yeah, that's all I had to say.
Yeah. Ms. Guzman? Okay.
Thank you. Yes, it is possible to love a person, but not like what they do. We all of us have, well, not all of us maybe, but have children. They do things we don't like, but we still love them. Yeah, we'll love them to death.
Yeah, that's so. We can't live vicariously through them, even though we try. Yes, Marlene.
Yeah, I just want to add to that. Yeah, we never give up on them. We always pray that they'll come around. So it's an expectation of hope that we see in them all the time, even though they're not really likable. And I got a few of those in my life.
I think we all may have some of that.
I'd just like to say thank you for saying that, because I've made the mistake of not doing that. You set people in stone, you know, they're doing something and it feels like it'll never change, and it's so easy to give up on that. So it's very important, like you said, to always hope the best. Love is hoping the best always, wanting the best always, no matter what. So appreciate that.
Sort of modeling ourselves after God. Does God love us even though we mess up? And that's really what we're looking at here, is God might not like, as Mr. Jackson said, not like what we did. So we have to reorganize our thinking, but he's still loving us because that opportunity is still held before us.
I think a good example of that, that's okay, is when Jacob and Esau, you know, Jacob swindled his brother out of his birthright and deceived his father, and told, dressed his skin in animal clothing so that he could steal his brother's birthright. And of course, you know the outcome of the story. And I think it's, you know, many years later he came to meet his brother, and though his brother wanted to kill him at the time, and years later Jacob brought him gifts and animals and many gifts and things, and his brother forgave him, and he did love him, even though at the time he wanted to kill him.
Yeah, that was a life-changing event in those cases. Any other responses? Mrs. Fitz?
This is the first time I've ever done this. We never know what a person is going through. And we don't know, you know, and so I think lots of times you need to give them a little love, you know, because there's some people that just have terrible lives. I mean, you know, and they can't help it and stuff. So I think, you know, we should give them at least a little love and try to figure out, you know, if there's some way that we can help them.
To love them through it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Just wait. It's being recorded now.
Well, I just started the new school year, and I had a student. I thought, oh boy, this kid, I mean, brought a little bit of treats for him, and he tried to take everything, and oh, he was just, I thought, oh, this boy's going to be trouble all year, you know. But then a little bit later, I found out, well, he's been taken away from his parents, he's been living in a home for years, and all this. And then I felt, oh, you know, how could I have felt like I did about him, and you know, and he's not been as bad as I thought, and you know, I tried to establish a relationship with him, and so I mean, I'm just thinking about what Miss Fitz said. So, well.
And now let's get to question 6. Is it possible to give all you possess to the poor and give even your body to be burned and still not love or show love? Ooh, does it sound like something in 1 Corinthians 13? So how much do we have to do? Or if we do everything, but we don't show love, what good is it? What is the value of it? Don't you feel that way when you have that student you were speaking of?
To me, when what that says is that a person can outwardly do all sorts of things that look loving, look sacrificial, but it's still got to be truly believed in the heart. It's something that has got to be not because of personal gain. People will die for something because of some sort of glory. You know what I mean? Some sort of they know they'll be loved posthumously, you know, whatever. But the idea is to do those things out of an outgoing concern for others, whether it be agape or even phileo, where you're relationally trying to do something for somebody. Mm-hmm. So
I remember it's a well-known minister in the church said a number of years ago about people who are serving. And some people were serving for self-aggrandizement. And he said, really the bottom line, when you get to like number six, is they were doing it because they were being watched or people were looking. But he said, the heart test is what is the reason they were serving? Was it because it was the right thing to do? Were they showing love or charity to others? Or because ultimately they expected to get something out of the deal? And you can't tell the difference on the outside.
Right.
It's really on the inside.
And speaking of salvation, including salvation, in other words, there's a concept of being saved and there's a concept of getting it as a reward. You know what I'm saying? In that you're doing it for the wrong reasons. You're doing it to gain favor as opposed to because you have favor mm-hmm. already.
So. Any other observations? Mrs. Jackson?
I would just say that sometimes some people do for others that they consider as less than them, and the motivation is not because I really want to help this person, but because it's making me look better than you. Mm-hmm. And if you're only doing it to make yourself look better instead of actually being concerned about the person, it's for nothing.
That's a good point. What is the objective for the service? Is it just because it's the right thing to do?
Just wanted to repeat what Merlin said. She said she has no problem with giving all of her stuff away to help somebody, but she don't know about this body burning stuff.
Yeah, well, we don't want to burn the food either. So, yeah, there was you did draw a line there, right? That's a okay, good point. Well, ladies and gentlemen, appreciated your contributions about agape and phileo and how we're going to apply it in our lives. And we'll look forward to next month's Bible study.